spent the winter writing songs about getting better. And if I'm being honest, I'm getting there. That's the Wonder Years. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jay's Talk Plus. She is Julia Kreutz, who's joining me for Jay's Talk Plus this season. Julia, good morning. Happy opening day.
Good morning. That was very poetic, Blake, and I'm glad that you started the show in the same way that you have started the show in the past.
For today and maybe April 15th. Nice. I think it's too self-serving an intro now that you're up full-time, but I thought it was a good way to introduce you, and that's a great way to set up opening day. Obviously, everyone is 0-0 today. Hope springs eternal. We are fresh off of a golden grapefruit, the spring training champions. And yeah, people make the hang the banner jokes. I want the belt. I want a championship belt for golden grapefruit that the Jays can wear and pass around. And we've got tons to talk about in 1 hour today. This is Jays Talk Plus in place of the Raptor show just for today. Raptor show will be back tomorrow if you're looking for that with myself and Matt Bonner. But today we've got this because it's Blue Jays opening day. April 15th, we'll be back full time. It's a 3 p.m. start today. So you got Dan and Buck with Hazel and Emily on the call. You got Blue Jay Central at 2 o'clock, so an hour-long Blue Jay Central with Jamie, Joe, Arden, Mike Petriello, myself, Caleb, Ben, Chris LaRue, and Sho Ali are on the radio call. Blair and Barker will be on 2 to 3. And post-game again, we got a loaded show, a loaded day of stuff. We also have 9 transactions as they set their opening day roster. And right as we came on, we have an opening day lineup. But Julia, before any of that, we got a little tease. Right. As we were prepping for the show this morning, Buster Olney of ESPN reporting that the Blue Jays have made another offer to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. There's still a gap, but conversation is ongoing. Given that we had a start of spring training deadline, how are you feeling about just like, obviously that's a mostly a nothing report, but right. They're still going 4 hours from opening day here.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, Blake, when you think about just how, I guess, conservative this front office has been in the past in the sense of not negotiating in season and keeping these things away from the actual playing field so that it doesn't become a distraction. We sort of did see it become a distraction a little bit in spring training, even after the deadline was passed. And I believe it's good news that the conversations are ongoing. It does give you a sense that this is very much something that both parties are interested in achieving. However, a little bit of a non-report, like you said, which is basically we are exactly where we were a month ago or so. But you see that there's still movement, and that has got to at least bring some confidence to the fan base, to the front office, even to the player himself, that this is not a normal negotiation. The Blue Jays won't necessarily act in the way that we have seen them act in the past because this is not a regular player that they're trying to sign. And so the gap remains. Whatever, like we all knew that that's what it was, but the fact of the matter is that as long as these conversations are ongoing, there is a chance. And like Ross Atkins said yesterday, he remains hopeful. He has hope that the Blue Jays will get this done. So I'd say overall, okay, good news.
Yeah,
all things considered.
My wrestling brain is fully expecting like Vlad to like come up to the plate in his first plate appearance and like sign the contract there, like ceremonially. Oh. And every contract signing in the history of wrestling ends in like violence and stuff. Yeah. So Vlad would obviously hit a home run right after. It'd be great. That's how I'm drawing it up in my head. Don't think that's how it's going to go down. You mentioned Ross Atkins' comments yesterday, and we'll talk a little bit more about the media availability at the Blue Jays workout at Rogers Center yesterday. What do you think of Ross Atkins' Spanish? How was it? You speak every language.
Well, I speak some languages.
Most languages.
You know, I wasn't expecting him to just break out the Spanish in the pre-opening day media availability. I think it's awesome to see a general manager even put in that effort, right? To actually speak to the players in their languages. That's really, really important. It's something that Atkins has taken pride in for many years now. It's cool. At the same time, it was a moment of like, huh, all right. You yeah. You really did that. That's all right, good for you, man.
It's like when in high school I would sing the Spanish parts of a Sublime song and be like, I know Spanish. I can sing the Spanish part of Caress Me Down. That is too deep a cut. Sorry. Okay. I'm going to put out the opening day lineup here. Yep. We'll come back to it as we talk about some roster construction stuff because I want to talk to you about kind of opening day ceremony. Like everyone's getting their tweets off. They're like, happy opening day. Everyone, you know, my photo of, a guy eating a baseball, Kazuchika Okada throwing out a first pitch in just his wrestling tights, stuff like that. We all have our little traditions.
Absolutely.
But let's touch on the starting day lineup first. Sure. Just because if anyone's listening and hasn't been on social media. By the way, so the Blue Jays had to clear for three 40-man spots by today because Jacob Barnes, Alan Roden, and Miles Straw have all, as we know, made the opening day roster, but we're not on the 40-man. So Tommy Nance has been designated for assignment. We kind of expected that one because he was out of options and lost out on one of those bullpen spots. Nick Robertson, who was one of the AAA depth relievers they churned toward the end of last year, he's been designated for assignment. And the only real surprise, Zach Pop got DFA'd. Zach Pop was on the IL, or potentially could have gone on the IL because he was injured. The Blue Jays also had an option of, hey, one of these injured guys, if they could go on the 60-day IL. Adam Mackle was a name that was kicked around. Instead, Zach Pop gets the DFA. No major surprises there, but Zach Pop, I guess, like a tiny surprise. We're going to talk about the bullpen. Almost nobody in the bullpen has options right now anyway. And once guys are healthy, they're going to have too many guys without options. This was going to happen to someone at some point.
We are going to see a ton of roster training because of this bullpen and how it is constructed right now. And the fact that we are obviously waiting for Ryan Burr and Eric Swanson to come back, and they both should have spots in this bullpen once they are healthy. And we are going to see quite a bit change for the Blue Jays once that is the case. And I will agree with you, Blake, that I guess the Pop decision is somewhat of a surprise just because we have seen this team be extremely high on Pop and what he can offer, you know, the sort of the swing and miss potential and all of that. We're a long way from 2023 when he pitched with any consistency, or 22 rather. The past couple of years have not been very good for Pop, and we have seen a huge dip in production. This seemed like a spring where maybe he could show that he was ready to sort of take a more consistent route. Didn't, got hurt, and it's just unfortunately, especially around this time, that's just the nature of the game.
Yeah, heavy sinker, but not a lot that's built on top of that over the last little while here. So we'll see if he clears and gets outrighted or if he lands somewhere else until then. Okay, now the good stuff. The DFA stuff is interesting, but here's the big stuff. Here's the starting lineup for today. Bo Bichette is going to lead off. He'll be followed by Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Anthony Santander. Andrés Giménez will back cleanup today. Alejandro Kirk, George Springer in center field, hitting sixth. Will Wagner gets the DH nod, and then Ernie Clement at third. So we don't get any clarity on the third base split because they're both starting today. And then Alan Roden makes his major league debut, hitting ninth and playing right field. All of that is, of course, behind Jose Berríos, who gets his third opening day nod as a Blue Jay. What do you think? First blush.
Giménez hitting fourth is one that immediately kind of draws my attention. I know that the Blue Jays are banking quite heavily on an offensive bounce back. This is a huge vote of trust, right? It really is. You kind of see the 2022 season, the All-Star season, you see that the potential is there for putting the ball in the air a little bit more, being a little bit more prolific. He hasn't produced at that clip since then, but this is a pretty good indication of what the Blue Jays believe Giménez can do. We sort of expected him, obviously, to hit ahead of Alejandro Kirk. There is the speed element there, kind of, you know, minimizing the chances for double plays and things of this sort with Kirk, who is slow. So that is pretty normal, pretty par for the course. But yeah, Giménez, cleanup hitter, not exactly what I expected to see on opening day. Not sure if, and obviously, you know, a CF next to Springer's name, I'm sure it also raised some eyebrows elsewhere.
Well, it answers a couple questions for us. You know, on a day that Springer and Roden are both in the lineup, you know, because both of those guys have been mentioned as options to play in center field, while Dalton Varsho is injured, at least against right-handed pitching. John Schneider saying yesterday that against left-handed pitching, it'll probably be Miles Straw. You know, there's defense value there. I don't know. He's like we talked about on our Tuesday episode. He has not hit even against lefties very much the last couple of years, but we at least know now if Roden and Springer are both in there, Springer will draw center field. I kind of thought if you had told me this was the opening nine, I probably would have guessed Springer's hitting fourth, Giménez fifth, Kirk sixth. Right. That's how they would have juggled it up. Interesting to see Springer as low as sixth. He didn't have a gangbuster spring. I know he came on a little bit toward the end there, but obviously last year he spent a lot of time at the top of that order where he has historically hit one of the all-time leaders in leadoff home runs. But John Schneider had talked about a little bit in camp and had a couple great quotes with both Shai Davidi and Keegan Mathison about, you know, his own self-evaluation and maybe being a little rigid with the lineups last year, maybe being a little slow to juggle things or move guys off of spots. So certainly interesting to see Springer. Springer hitting sixth is as interesting to me as Jimenez in the four spot coming off a season where Jimenez, you know, slugged 340, right?
Right on. Yeah, and I am interested just to hear from you. One, if you think this is sustainable, not just Springer in center field, but also, you know, hitting as low as sixth. Jimenez hitting cleanup. And what would you expect, Blake, from like what would a successful quote unquote George Springer season sort of entail for you?
Yeah, that's you know, if he could even hold steady on what his final line was last year, I think that would be, you know, it's not great. You hope for higher than that, but he finished the season with a 674 OPS. That came with a very cold start and then a very hot middle and then a cold end that was like, the cold end kind of went by quietly because we, you know, people weren't maybe as locked in or didn't matter as much once the Blue Jays had sold off. But he kind of dipped again. So I don't know. I think you set the bar around like a 700 OPS. You would love to get George Springer back to where he was prior, but at age, you know, age 35 now, I don't know that you're like, hey, he's going to go back and be the hitter that he was in 2022, and certainly not the years before that. So, you know, the focus in terms of process, you'd like to see him pulling the ball in the air a little bit more. That was a huge part of his issue in the cold start last year. He just wasn't able to get around on stuff with any sort of lift, any sort of exit velocity. So you'd like to see that come around. The one thing that Springer did do well last year, despite the poor season, is he ran pretty well. He stole 16 bases last year, which was the second most he'd ever stolen a season. So him and Jimenez sandwiching Kirk is interesting. And then obviously Springer will then hit ahead of, in this iteration, ahead of a couple guys who are pretty good with the bat, maybe gives you some hit and run opportunities and things like that. Wagner, you know, pretty good approach at the plate. And then Ernie Clement, obviously a very high contact oriented guy. So maybe this is just juggling to see, you know, one of the talking points yesterday was about how to make this offense better than last year. And some of that is going to be, Bo Bichette's way better than he was last year. You add Jimenez and hope he can get back to his 2023 self. You hope George Springer gets a little bit back. But maybe there's also an element of we have to be more intentional about how we structure the lineup and where there'll be opportunities to, you know, not sacrifice bunt and move a guy over level manufacturing runs, but be a little bit more creative with how the bottom half of the lineup creates offense.
Yeah, the number one thing that we heard basically from everyone yesterday was when the question was, how does this team get better and sort of move up from what we saw last year? It's scoring runs, scoring early, allowing yourself to dictate what you do with your pitching, giving the high leverage guys a little bit of a break. We didn't see that, especially early on in the year. And it was a year that started with a very interesting approach, offensive approach, I would say. It seemed like we have spoken about just the amount of information and how players digest it, how information is delivered to them. But it did seem at times, Blake, last year, that there was too much information and it was paralyzing. And it was more of an on-base approach. Guys were not driving the ball with any type of consistency. We did see, you know, we did go as far as let's sacrifice bunt and move a guy up or whatever early on in the season. It just didn't work for what the Blue Jays were trying to do or how they were constructed. And no one was putting the barrel on the ball with any type of consistency other than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So this year, when the Blue Jays bring in a new hitting coach in David Popkins, and they're talking about being creative and staying fluid and staying flexible and playing the matchups, and you have John Schneider, you know, making statements such as, I need to be a little more flexible. I wasn't as flexible last year, and I've learned from it and things of the sort. You look at this lineup, it seems like they are, you know, putting their money where their mouth is in a way, in the sense that this is a pretty, it's already a more creative lineup than we saw all year last season. I'm still intrigued by Bichette hitting leadoff and, you know, Schneider saying yesterday, hey, he's the best I've ever seen him or I've seen him in the major league so far. There's stuff to like here for sure. It's a good start.
Yeah, and then look, if you're going to do lineup construction, you know, analytically, there's not a huge difference. You know, like you want to optimize your lineup. You want to make the right decisions. But over the course of the season, you know, whether it's Jimenez, Kirk, Springer, 4-5-6, or Springer, Jimenez, Kirk, that doesn't make a huge difference. But the one thing that you really are in control of and does make a difference is the guys at the top of the lineup get to come up to the plate more. And John Schneider's kind of referenced that a couple times. I think all else equal, you go with this as your top three because Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, and Anthony Santander are pretty safely expected to be your three best hitters. This way, they're at the top. Whatever order you put them in, those three guys are getting up every first inning. Those three guys are getting up more than anyone else on the roster. As far as an Occam's razor goes, that's a pretty, hey, let's simplify this. Let's just get our best guys at the top of the lineup, even if Bo Bichette's not a quote-unquote traditional leadoff hitter type. The other thing to note here, and Chris Black pointed this out on Twitter at Down to Black. He had a couple of great threads this morning, as he always does. But the way the Blue Jays lineup is constructed, especially while Dalton Varsho is on the IL and with the nine that they've chosen today, almost everyone in the lineup is like a high contact rate guy. And that's not necessarily, you know, we've heard a lot about swing decisions over the last couple of years. And the swing decisions discourse has tended to lean toward more like, hey, don't swing at bad stuff. But this is a really high contact group. And we've heard David Popkins and the hitters talk about working with David Popkins about doing more damage. You take, you know, a high, maybe this year is going to be more about making sure you put good bats on the balls instead of, you know, more about, hey, do jump on the stuff that you can do damage with rather than avoid the stuff you can't do damage with. Obviously, that's a fine needle to thread, but it is interesting. It's a lot of high contact guys, not a lot of guys with swing and miss. Yeah, it's just an interesting trade. It'll be interesting to watch where the team level stats come in terms of, hey, are they putting a lot of balls in play? Maybe they're a team that leans more toward batting average than OBP, not in terms of value, but just, mm-hmm. you know, where their strengths are.
That's such a good point, Blake. And when you look at the bottom of this lineup today, which we know that it can change, you have Will Wagner, Ernie Clement, Alan Roden. Certainly three extremely contact-oriented hitters. You turn it back over to Bo Bichette. So, and you, Roden can run too.
Mm-hmm.
He can run too. He's gotten better at that. And, you know, if he gets a little bit of a green light here, I think we're going to see some of that as well, especially if he's hitting ninth. But it does look pretty prolific, and it does look like it gives a guy like Bichette also a chance to hit with runners on base, which has proven extremely successful for the Blue Jays when he's been healthy, obviously. You know, we know that there is swing and miss to Bo's game, and there's always going to be swing and miss to Bo's game, but he's still the line drive guy that can make things happen and get things, you know, exciting very quickly with his bat. And so, yeah, you put some contact guys, you know, in the bottom of the lineup, you turn it over to Bichette, especially if they can run, good things can happen.
Yeah, Alan Roden, who stole 38 bases over the last two minor league seasons, and that's in, 240 games, so not even two full seasons. He can run a little bit. The Bo Bichette thing's fascinating because, like, you know, sometimes I'll get, like painted in a corner a little bit as, like, an analytics guy, and Bo Bichette is not what the quote-unquote analytics would suggest for a leadoff guy. You know, you want a high OBP in that spot. Traditionally, you want a guy who's going to steal some bases in that spot. And Bo going 24 for 25 on the bases a couple years ago seems very far behind us now.
Right.
But one thing I really like, and this is like more of a feel thing than anything, Bo Bichette is such an aggressive hitter. I love the idea of a pitcher has to come out and be worried about the first batter of the game jumping on a first pitch. Like, you got to come with your best stuff right out of the gate. I know, hey, look, a guy who could take 8 or 9 pitches and let Vlad see a lot of stuff in the on-deck circle, that has some value too. But I like the idea of putting an opposing starting pitcher on their heels right away because Bo Bichette, especially if we get the better version of Bo Bichette, not the version from last year, when he's going, there are a few hitters who are as aggressive as him and as good jumping early in the count on pitchers. So it's a top three in the order that would make me uncomfortable as a starting pitcher.
A ton of pressure, ton of pressure right off the gate. And we even saw that in spring training games where guys were just walking Guerrero and choosing to face Santander. And Santander doesn't have to do much in that scenario. Like, obviously he's here to hit for power and to hit home runs, but something that we saw a little bit of in the spring is just Santander making contact, hitting an RBI single and giving the Blue Jays another run on the board. And that's kind of what we're talking about when we're talking about staying creative, using your different golf clubs or whatever it may be. Like, they put it so eloquently during the spring. I know nothing about golf, so that was a tough one for me to follow, but you know, you kind of get the gist of what they're trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, to simplify, it's like, oh, you're 160 yards out, do you go for the six or the five? Five iron, I would club that pass. Well, I'm using a bad example here. It's just knowing the right tool for the situation. Okay, the other component here, and I'll take this back, not necessarily about today's lineup, but about this team talking about how they need to be better than last year. And they were average to below average in basically every offensive category. Yep. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. had a great season by the end. You can hope for, certainly hope for a Bo Bichette bounce back, and not just hope on it. You can pretty reliably think that Bo Bichette's going to be better than last year. George Springer at age 35, I don't think you could price back in a big bounce back. If it's a bounce back, it's going to be a more modest one, I think. And then you look, and especially when Varsho is back, they have three immensely important defensive players in Andres Jimenez, Alejandro Kirk, and Dalton Varsho, who will be in there every day and once Varsho's back. And all three of those guys were below average at the plate last year. In the case of Kirk and Varsho, they were close to league average. They weren't far off. And then Jimenez has been a league average hitter in the past. How comfortable are you with the fact that this Jays offense being improved for this year does rely on a couple of guys that, even if they don't get off to the best offensive starts, those three guys are not coming out of the lineup? Their defensive value is too paramount to what this team's going to do on that side of the ball. Where's your comfort level in that number of guys needing to be, hey, we're not setting the bar at like OPS 900, but you got to be like a league average bat to make that defense really play up.
Yeah, and I think that is such a fair area for concern for this team, where it's kind of all offseason, even after the Anthony Santander signing, you look at this roster and you think to yourself, this lineup could use one more reliable bat. And you look at Andres Jimenez with so much to prove, hitting number four today. That is where my mind goes. Let's put it like that, where it's like, yeah, maybe you needed one more bat to really solidify this lineup. We've seen Dalton Varsho get going, and you know, he's seen stretches of just amazing production over the past 2 years. It hasn't been consistent at all. It's either whatever or he's very, very good. So how can you get him to a bit of a more regular production type of spot where you're not, you know, basically playing the lottery with what you're going to get from him? I don't have that answer. It's, the Blue Jays have a new hitting coach who is probably going to try different things here in staying creative and things of the sort. But it does concern me. With Jimenez, we did see a little bit better production during the spring. I know that spring numbers don't count, but when you look at the swings and just the quality of the contact, the fact that he was hitting the ball pretty loudly when he was, great. That all bodes well. Nothing is proven yet. As for Kirk, same thing. You hear him speak. Yesterday, he spoke for the first time since signing his extension, and he's saying that he feels even better than he did in 2022 when he was a Silver Slugger. Okay, but you're going to have to catch way more than you did that year or even any year prior. This is your team now. How do we ensure that the offensive production stays somewhat reliable when that is the case? Because we've seen that in the past. It has not been the case with Kirk. If he's catching a lot, the offense dips. So how much preparation can you actually put in order to mitigate something like that when it has been consistently so over the years? For sure, it's an area of concern. And I don't think that there is a clear-cut answer here, Blake.
No, there's not. And you mentioned Dalton Varsho's inconsistency, kind of ups and downs. I think that's always going to be the hitter type right. He is. You know, he's also a big adjustments in the box guy. And that's more of a, Joe Siddle break that down, or Chris Black break it down in the threads. But we did talk a lot last year about the tweaks he was making. Even when I was on Blair and Barker, we had his dad on, Gary Varsho, former major leaguer as well, talking about some of those changes. So he can tinker a little bit and to try to find it. So I don't know that he'll be any less inconsistent. I think he can be better. And I think when you hear David Popkins talk about damage and how much he likes damage, Varsho's a guy that can speak right to. And Varsho's also a guy that has a little bit more swing and miss than today's lineup. He might be able to embrace that damage talk. By the way, Dalton Varsho played center field in a minor league game yesterday, but did not throw the ball. And no one provided me the context of, did he not throw the ball because he didn't get the opportunity? Like, no balls got hit to him? Or did he like catch the ball and then like hand it off to the right fielder to throw for him?
I would have loved to see that. And yes, it's the latter. It was by design that he didn't make any throws. And so First of all, what did the scorecard for that look like? Probably very weird if he's just passing the ball to the right fielder instead of the right fielder.
Although what I'd imagine is it didn't come up on the scorecard because you wouldn't get anybody out.
Yeah,
so you wouldn't have to score it anyway.
But yeah, so basically that is what happened. By design, he didn't make any throws. He's still obviously rehabbing the shoulder. He underwent surgery late last year. He hit pretty well in the spring. You can't count on that to stay as it was or to carry on, obviously, especially now. You know, he's in Toronto with the team. He's going to get his gold glove today, and then he's going back to Florida. That's basically what John Schneider said. He's going to continue to rehab there. No timetable for him, Blake. Basically, what Schneider said is that they have somewhat of a set plan of what they want to see. Good to see him back in the field. He didn't play the field at all during camp, but I think you're right in that, you know, he is always going to be sort of a streaky guy. Mm-hmm. But how do you make sure that that is also still working for your lineup? That is the manager's job.
And to John Schneider's point about him maybe being a little inflexible last year, do you get a little more aggressive this year leaning into hot streaks and things like that, where you have lefties in Jimenez, Wagner, Roden, and Varsho, who all could conceivably start? Do you get a little more aggressive moving them around? Hey, if it looks like Varsho's starting to get on a heater, do you bump him up to fourth and Jimenez slides down or something like that? Some options there. Here's the thing. The more good players you have, the more options you have, the less the actual specifics will matter. On the Jimenez front, I do think there are a lot of underlying indicators that Jimenez will be a better offensive player than he was last year. He's got to be better than last year. Last year was like 638 OPS is too low, even if you're a slick defender. I say this is like Ray Ordonez was like my favorite player when I was a little kid. And that guy really pushed the limits of how many gold gloves you can win before still getting DFA'd. You got to be a little bit better. But I think anyone who hasn't seen Jimenez or isn't locked in on exactly what he brings is going to fall in love with the defense so quickly. The Jays have nothing but righty starters. And six out of the eight in their bullpen are also righties. They're going to start the season against an Orioles team that could start, we don't have their lineup yet, could start six lefties / switch hitters today. Jimenez is going to be busy. I think people are going to like that pretty quick. So even if he just gets the offense up a little bit, we'll be all right. Let's talk about the pitchers he'll be defending behind, but let's do that after a break. We'll also see if we get an Orioles lineup by then. Talk some opening day traditions and things like that as well. As Jays Talk Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you for another half hour. It's opening day. Blair and Barker will be with you 2 to 3 to continue to get you set up as well. We'll also have Blue Jay Central with your boy at 2 o'clock as well. It is opening day. We're going to talk a little bit more Blue Jays, but Julia, before we do that.
Yes.
Do you have any opening day like traditions, superstitions, anything like that?
Listen, yes. The first tradition is I give my wife an opt out every year. Look at her and I say,
like contract?
Are you sure? Are you sure you want to do this? One more season of this? So far, so good.
She picked up her option on Julia for the 2025 season,
which is I'm glad. It's still paying for the dog's food, so that's good. And I think just I'm not a big necessarily tradition person, but just looking at this is going to be so esoteric, but just the passage of time. I think that everything in baseball is so just season oriented. I mean, the four seasons, right? We talk about the spring and we talk about the summer and the fall and the winter and all of that. And just coming from Brazil, that's never really something that we did, right? Soccer doesn't really follow a seasonal schedule because there are no real seasons in Brazil all that much. And so when the season starts, it's always for me just a time to reflect, I guess, and just be mesmerized by the passage of time. And that's kind of how I celebrate opening day in my own head. How about you?
Yeah, I'm nothing quite as nice as that. Now there's a new tradition. You baked cookies and brought them in today. So that is a new
tradition.
I will be expecting freshly baked cookies every opening day moving forward. You know, I'm relentlessly checking all of my fantasy lineups because teams don't put players on the injured list until the very last moment, like the Blue Jays did today. So, like, I need to get in roster compliance. Right. That's not a nice tradition. That's a I'm a sicko and have to keep refreshing my pages.
A busy day for you, too. So that's important when you have time.
We'll be fine. I did my last draft last night in a super deep league. I know way too many, like, fringy bench and platoon. Like, Brian De La Cruz is on one of my rosters. There's too many guys at this point. Obviously, I'll deck myself out in fighting necklaces so my ions are proper for the first slow pitch game of the year. But the biggest thing for me is I do like to watch a lot of baseball movies in the lead up for spring training, but because I do basketball and baseball and it's been a very big March Madness and important for the Raptors with a high draft pick, I've not gotten to do that as much. I need my Mr. 3000 fix at some point. But the main thing for me is I try to at least root myself for the day in the morning for the season ahead in positivity. Not like homerism and shilling, because obviously there are a lot of concerns with this Blue Jays team, and there's probably, right now, if you look at the projection models and the expert picks and stuff like that and betting lines, a 50-50 chance they make the playoffs, which is not where the bar was supposed to be in 2025 when this window started and you look at what the team looked like a couple years ago on paper. However, it is a fresh start and it's opening day and everyone is 0-0 and the American League is wide open, and it is such a fun I love baseball so much, and there's so much season ahead that I just want to reroute myself in the possibilities of the good things that could happen and how fun this all could be. In the back of my head, sure, this could go poorly, and then our July shows are awesome, and then our August and September shows suck.
Yeah.
But there's also the possibility it's really fun, and they make a run with it here, and things go well, and they're adding at the deadline, and we're doing shows into October. There's just so much to be positive about in baseball in general. So this is like mostly a Jays thought, but mostly just, I don't know. It's very fun. It's a very fun time. And for today, I want to look at all the, like, one of my favorite songs is a song by Paramore called For a Pessimist, I'm Pretty Optimistic. And that's kind of the, I'm not the most rosy about the season ahead and where the franchise is overall. But for today, I can get there.
Do you think that this is a popular opinion, or do you think it would be a hot take for our listeners? Well, Blake is optimistic about the Blue Jays.
For today. And like I said, it feels like a coin flip of if they make the playoffs or not. And that's not even where the bar, like, we're supposed to be in the championship is the bar era here. So I'm not lowering the bar, but just for today, I want to feel good. I want to think about the things that could, hey, Vlad could do this. Bo could do that. Jimenez could do that. We get to watch Max Scherzer on Saturday in a Blue Jays uniform, which is still like very, very sick. And I don't think the shine on that will wear off at any point.
Yeah.
So I like to kind of root myself in those things for today, because this is, it's all supposed to be very fun.
Let's focus on the good 50, right? If it is a 50-50 chance.
Yeah. And then April 15th, when we're back full time, start focusing on the negative 50 and all the things that could and maybe at that point are going wrong.
By the second inning today, we'll be there, I think.
Yeah. Oh, that's...
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. What was it? Opening day 2 years ago and 3 years ago were both really bad.
Right on. Right? But I do trust Jose Berríos. He delivered last year. He did.
He did.
Against Zach Eflin.
Yeah. And it's not even the same two teams, right? Like, last year was against the Rays. For anyone who doesn't remember last year's opener, Zach Eflin gave up 3 homers and 6 runs in 5 2/3 innings. George Springer, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and Kevin Biggio, the newest Kansas City Royal, made the opening day roster. Jays win 8-2. All 3 of those guys homered. Berríos went 6 innings, 2 earned, 6 hits, a walk, and 6 Ks. But in 2022, he only went 1/3 of an inning. So
yeah, just so such a discrepancy in those two starts. And the Blue Jays, it was a bit of a roller coaster, before that really, really solid opening day last year. The couple of opening days prior, it was kind of all over the place. But I think that you are safe with expecting a quality start from Berríos, more than 1/3 of an inning and getting hit around. Obviously, when you take the mound, it's a different story. But he has been, to use sort of the quote of the spring here, the model of consistency for this rotation. And that's why he's on the mound today.
Yeah. And it's, he's steady as they come, as you kind of painted the picture there. Let's talk about this pitching staff overall, because Jose Berríos, 30, on the younger end, for this rotation. It's you know, it's got Kevin Gausman, Chris Bassett, Max Scherzer, and Bowden Francis in there as well. I know you asked John Schneider yesterday about how, look, all those guys on paper are good. If if those guys all start do what the Jays did 2 years ago, and they're like the only team ever to have four guys go, or all five guys go like 30 starts or whatever for that year, but let's say five this year, things could go well. But they are managing a very veteran pitching staff that all individuals who, with the exception of Scherzer, have been very healthy.
Right.
But they are, you know, with the exception of Bowden Francis, in their 30s, in some cases pushing the further end of 30, as I am. What was John Schneider's response when you asked him about that? And how's your feeling about how they, especially early on here, 21 games and 22 days to start?
Yeah, it's on paper, this is a very, very good rotation. It is a fine group. Yes, it is lacking a left-handed starter. And if you want to sort of, you know, poke holes in it, maybe that could be one that, that you could bring up. But the truth of the matter is that this is a pretty good group of starters. Now, obviously, with the veterans, there will be health concerns. We saw a guy like Kevin Gausman really go deep into, okay, I'm going to start my preparation a little bit earlier. I'm going to put on some more good weight here to start the season. You know, he was kind of chasing something all year last year because he had a delayed start to this spring. And, you know, that's just kind of how your body reacts once you get up there in age. That's and so it's on the pitcher to sort of identify that and put up or put in place better or more appropriate, I guess, preparation routines. And so that's kind of what we saw with Gausman. He was pretty candid about that. A guy like Scherzer kind of comes in already with a little bit of a question mark. We all knew that, you know, he didn't pitch much last year, just over 43 innings. But now the thumb acts up, and he is talking about, you know, changing his routines and his preparation or in his post-game routine, rather, as well, to make sure that the thumb is all good. Now, he is a future Hall of Famer. He's been doing this a long time. I doubt that this is the first time he's had to change routines and change things about how he, you know, takes on his day. But obviously, it's kind of an awkward place to even start the season. Now, Schneider did say, and my question specifically was about just 21 games with one off day to start the season. And this early on, having to manage your pitching staff with that in mind. And basically what he said was, look, we worked pretty diligently in spring training to make sure that especially Jose and Chris Bassett can both go to up to 100 pitches if necessary. Everyone is pretty built up with the exception of Scherzer. He did bring up Yariel Rodriguez out of the pen as a guy who can provide length if necessary, giving them a little bit more flexibility. But yes, this is a concern for this team. And the Rob Longley of the Toronto Sun sort of followed up by asking, you know, what has been the formula here to keep these guys healthy, even though they are getting up there in age. And Schneider points to a few things, the big thing being just communication and making sure that guys are being very honest with how they're feeling so that the training staff and the coaching staff and the manager himself can sort of chart out a game plan that that keeps these guys healthier for longer. He also mentioned that there is luck involved, and the Blue Jays have been pretty lucky in that regard so far. Now, you can't necessarily count on luck to stay on your side forever, and so that is where preparation routines, the communication, the fact that the training staff is very on top of these guys, that's where it all comes into play.
Yeah, and you got to make sure that AAA depth is better than it was last year, and certainly better than it looks on paper right now. Obviously, Jake Bloss is there, but Adam Mako injured. You know, I don't know if you want to dip into the Eric Lauer, Adam Kloffenstein group of guys if something does happen. So better hope the Bisons get off to a nice start on the pitching side as well. So Max Scherzer is in here, and that's obviously super fun for our purposes and for any baseball fan. It also seemed like the kind of messaging yesterday at the media workout that you attended, other than some of the specifics, Kirk's extension, the offense needing to be a little bit better, et cetera, a common thread was that culturally and chemistry-wise, from a clubhouse standpoint, that things felt a little different. Now, there hasn't been a boatload of turnover on the staff side. Obviously, David Popkins is in as hitting coach. There were some, not Pete Walker tweaks, but below that on his staff. And then Max Scherzer and Anthony Santander are in, who are from afar look like very different leader types, but very well-liked guys. What did you make of all of that talk about clubhouse culture yesterday?
I thought it was more honest than what I expected, I think, just more direct in the sense that, you know, Barrios was the first out of the gate to say, yeah, we had some things last year that sort of prevented us from enjoying what we were doing to the best of our ability. You know, obviously I'm paraphrasing here, but that to me was pretty direct. And sometimes you don't need to change a whole bunch, right, Blake? Sometimes you just need one new voice in that room, in that coaching staff, or on that roster that can really bring everyone together, hold people accountable, be willing to try new things, and get guys to be open to trying new things as well. It's not all the time that you actually need to make significant rooted changes, right? You kind of just identify what's lacking and you address it. And I think that that is kind of what the Blue Jays were able to achieve here. Schneider did go into a little bit of the leadership that Scherzer brings, and even Andrés Giménez and Anthony Santander really differentiated the personalities there, where, you know, Santander will talk to you very directly, but he'll be very kind and respectful and careful with his words when he's talking to you, whereas Scherzer is, to quote John Schneider, in your face, and he will tell you like it is. And that accountability, obviously, you know, it does bring a very positive effect into the clubhouse. Not that they didn't have that last year, but sometimes you do need a little bit of a tweak, a little bit of a change to get guys there, without forgetting that they all love this game and they want to win, and they're real competitors. But at the end of the day, if they are not having fun, then what are we doing? I think that's kind of what I took away from it. It was pretty interesting to hear, but yeah, I don't know. Did you get a chance to listen to it? What did you think?
Yeah, I listened to John Schneider's. I didn't listen to every single person. Raptors played last night, so yeah. I was splitting duties and things like that. I think it's interesting. I've mostly been interested with what John Schneider is saying from a self-evaluation standpoint, yeah. Because there have been some tweaks and changes, and you know, the level of accountability, at least verbally, that he showed leading into this one about, you know, some of the ways he can be better as a manager is interesting to me, because look, obviously if things don't go well to start this year, when you talk like that, it's good. That accountability is an important part of leadership, and an important part of that job. But you also kind of put a target on yourself and say, hey, the clubhouse was an issue last year. You know, the year before that, the talking point coming in was, oh, the communication between like the front office and like the integration of the analytics and the strategy between the different levels because of the Barrios getting pulled and all the different kind of bus throwing that happened after that. So this would be, you know, a second consecutive year where something like that is the talking point. And I don't know. I think it's interesting. It's a necessary component of leadership, but it does kind of, you know, admit that he's probably in the crosshairs if things don't get off to a great start this year, fair or otherwise. And then obviously big picture, you know, the whole front office is in the crosshairs if things don't go well this year. But yeah, I just found it interesting from that point of view of, you know, accountability, good. Also kind of, you'll put yourself in the light there of if this doesn't get off, if the chemistry is an issue, if the clubhouse culture is an issue, if, you know, you start nitpicking the lineup decisions and bullpen usage and stuff like that. You know, hey, good to admit it, but it's a real thing.
He said it in no uncertain terms yesterday. Mm-hmm. That starts with me. That is what John Schneider said. And I mean, I like it. I think that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. I think the manager should put himself out there like that. Just if anything, or if nothing else, so that the players know he's got their back.
Yeah.
It's important. Okay. It really is.
In terms of Schneider decision-making, we've got a couple minutes left here. So let's take a quick look at the bullpen, which I think at least to start the season shapes up pretty straightforward for him. Jeff Hoffman's the clear closer. Jimmy Garcia is the clear number two. And then you have Chad Green, Nick Sandlin, and Jacob Barnes on the right-handed side, Brendan Little and Richard Lovelady on the left-handed side, and then Yariel as a long man. You don't have to be that inflexible. Sandlin obviously can pitch to lefties because of the splitter and things like that. But pretty straightforward bullpen hierarchy for you to start the year?
I'd say so. The one sort of name that concerns me a little bit, and you and I were talking a little bit before the show about this, is Chad Green. He is still mentioned as a pretty high leverage guy, and maybe that changes once Swanson is back from the IL, but I'm not sure he is the most reliable. On paper, he looks good. He looks like Chad Green, but I'm not sure you can really trust in Chad Green in those high leverage spots. And if he should be even your number two option, maybe right now out of necessity, he would be up there. But just looking at his numbers, I'm not sure you can make much of anything that the Blue Jays did in the last month of last season.
No.
I think we can just flush that and forget about it. But he had an 11.42 ERA in that final month of the season. And
yeah,
he was surrendering a ton of hard contact, a ton of extra base hits. It's just, I'm not sure that you can rely on Chad Green being the Chad Green that he once was.
Yeah, and that's not how regression is supposed to work, where, like, you're overperforming, so then by you have to underperform. That's called the gambler's fallacy. But that's how it worked out for Chad Green. His overall numbers for last year settled in just fine when you take the hot start that was never going to sustain and the really cold end. 3.21 ERA, 3.80 underlying expected ERA. Pretty, like, the velocity was back to where it needed to be. The stuff and location metrics were pretty solid. But yeah, I think he's best cast as probably a seventh inning guy,
right,
rather than a, you know, hey, your emergency fill in on a day that Hoffman or Jimmy Garcia aren't available.
Speaking of Hoffman, this will be the first time he is the number one undisputed closer on a team. It feels like he has earned it. I am interested to hear from you, what you make of Schneider's comments yesterday, just being very categorical about it, and kind of what this represents for this bullpen.
Yeah, I don't think there's much, there needs to be much subtlety there. He's like, Jimmy Garcia had an awesome year last year and is in the mix with Jeff Hoffman in terms of guys with, like, relievers who have multiple quality weapons. Jeff Hoffman has four pitches that graded as above average last year. There are only a dozen relievers in baseball who can say that and who also, like, threw those four pitches regularly. Obviously, he's only thrown three to righties, three to lefties, mixing it up that way. But they're all good. Three of them are big swing and miss weapons. You think about what Jordan Romano did, and not to, like, kick dirt on Jordan Romano on his way out the door, because he was very, very good here. That fastball slider and the way, if one of those pitches lost it a little bit, you know, the interplay between those two goes away. Well, Hoffman's fastball and slider are both better, and he's got a third offering against either-handed hitter. I like Jeff Hoffman. It's such a cool story to have him, you know,
right,
go through this route of, I got to make 50 stops and I got to move to their bullpen, and Bryce Harper has to save me from getting an opt-out and going to Japan 2 years ago. It's pretty fun stuff. This is actually what I'm talking about on Blue Jay Central a little later too. So tune in for more of that. We got 2 minutes left. So if you missed it a little earlier, couple of designated for assignment: Zach Pop, Tommy Nance, and Nick Robertson got DFA'd to clear room on the 40-man for Jacob Barnes, Adam Roden, and Miles Straw, who joined this team. Today's opening day lineup is Bo Bichette up top, followed by Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Anthony Santander, Andrés Giménez in the cleanup spot, Alejandro Kirk, George Springer in center field hitting sixth. Will Wagner gets the DH, Ernie Clement gets a third base start, and Adam Roden makes his major league debut in right field, batting ninth. We don't have an Orioles lineup just yet, but they will start Zach Eflin, 30-year-old righty, who had a 3.59 ERA last year. Actually, kind of a similar profile to Jose Berríos last year. Their ERAs were almost identical. Both of them saw a pretty good drop-off in their strikeout rate, but the underlying stuff, still pretty solid. Zach Eflin never walks anyone. Like, 98th percentile for nibbling around the edges, and he gets guys to swing outside of the zone when he does go outside of the zone because of that. And then both of those guys are going to throw, you know, four, sometimes even five different pitches. So, you know, Jose Berríos against lefties is like 25%, 25%, 25%. Good luck guessing. Zach Eflin, a little bit of that as well. And then obviously this Orioles lineup, pretty good if you project the young guys forward. We broke it down on Tuesday. How are you feeling? We got a minute left. How are you feeling for opening day?
You know what? I'm feeling pretty optimistic for a pessimist. But really quickly, I wanted to ask you, these 21 first games of the season, what would be an acceptable, I guess, outcome here for you?
I mean, acceptable, like, survive them. It's a really tough part of the schedule. Survive them healthy, be hanging around 500. I think if you come out of it 12-9, given the quality of competition, how few off days you have, I think you call that a pretty good start to your season. So that's kind of the number circled in my head. And unfortunately, we don't get to talk about all of these first games, but we will be back on April 15th. By the way, what about you? What's a number for wins?
Yeah, I'm around that.
Okay. We will be back on April 15th. Jays Talk Plus will start up as an everyday show then. We might hop in with a podcast or have a weekend Jays Talk pre and post game before then, but otherwise expect April 15th. Raptor Show will be back in this spot at 11 a.m. tomorrow if you're looking for me and Matt. Thanks to Amit Mann, Jake Schultz, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Blair and Barker will be with you 2 to 3. They'll also have Jays Talk for you post-game. Ben Schulman, Chris LaRue, and Sho Ali have you for the game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Blue Jay Central at 2 o'clock, game at 3. It's opening day. Have an awesome day, everyone.